Okay, am I still on? Is everyone there?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks for making it on our this month's National Anti-Biomass Incineration Campaign call. We have calls every month where we focus on a particular topic relevant to biomass energy, invite guest speakers, and discuss the issue. Our topic this month is biomass incinerator noise, and we'll be discussing the unfortunate health and economic impacts of noise from biomass incinerators and how residents can respond, with a focus on the Gainesville Renewable Energy Center biomass incinerator in Florida, also called GREC. Our guest speakers today are Debbie Martinez, registered nurse, Peter Perkins, PhD and colonel, retired colonel in the U.S. Army, and courtesy professor at University of Florida, also a neighbor of the GREC incinerator, as well as Ray Washington, who is an attorney. Our speakers will speak for 5 to 10 minutes apiece, and then we'll have the remaining time for questions. If you could hold your questions until after the speakers are done, that would be great, and I will keep track of time. We are recording this call so we can pass around the audio to folks inside our network and the public at large, and we'll send a link out to the listserv with the recording. Our call will end at 5. Okay, let's go with our first speaker, Debbie Martinez.
Ray Washington.
Before we get started, oh, great, Ray's on. Before we get started, if everyone can just give their name and what state they're in, that would be great, and then we'll get into Debbie's talk.
Karen Orr.
Hi, I'm
Florida. I'm with the Energy Justice Network.
Hi, I'm John Mahoney. I live in Turkey Creek in Gainesville, Florida. We're the one that's having the problem with the biomass at the present.
I'm Mark Floyd, live in Hague, Florida. Greg, biomass plant is our problem, Alachua, Florida.
This is Michael Canny in Alachua, Florida. We've been fighting the biomass plant for several years as well.
This is Peter Perkins, live in Turkey Creek, the 2,400-person neighborhood right next to GREC or across the street from them.
Let's see, we have some people from Florida announce themselves. Anyone else from around the country?
Yes, I'm... Yes, my name's Debbie Martinez. I'm from Gainesville, Florida.
And this is Mike Ewall from D.C., Energy Justice Network.
Okay. I can ask again after we have our speakers, so let's get into our discussion today. And Debbie Martinez, would you like to start us off?
All right, I'd be glad to, Samantha. First, I just wanted to thank all of you who have continued to devote so much of your time and energy on this anti-biomass incineration campaign. We really appreciate what you're doing. And basically, I'm a resident at Gainesville, Florida, Alachua County. I'm a registered nurse, and I recently came back home in 2010, and I discovered that they started this biomass project. And I learned about it, and now that it's gone online a few months ago, I'm learning that the noise is far worse than anything that I've read about. And basically, I just wanted to share a little bit of information with you that hopefully you can take back to your community and will help you. The main thing I wanted to get across is that the documented evidence compiled by the World Health Organization, they report that intrusive sound, whether it's annoying and irritating noise similar to what our residents here in Alachua County here in Florida have been suffering from, results in adverse health effects. Intrusive sound, just like that of a barking dog or a mega bass boom cars or amplified noise projected into the home from the outside, constitutes a potent stressor that can result in increased blood pressure, essential hypertension, increased heart rate, ischemic heart disease, headaches, nausea, and altered blood flow, changes in the blood viscosity and blood lipids, and shifts the electrolyte balance. In addition, I hope I didn't say anything off there. In addition, according to WHO, exposure to noise increases drug use, fosters substance abuse, and promotes anxiety, stress, irritability, depression, aggression, and interpersonal
Paula
conflict.
Paula Stamer.
Hi, Paula.
Hi.
Want me to go ahead and continue, or did you want to introduce
yourself? Oh, no, go ahead. I just came on now.
Okay. And, you know, the registered nurse. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to say that I just feel as a registered nurse that it's important for the public and our elected officials, the medical community, and law enforcement to understand the true health impact on people who are subjected to being assaulted with annoying and irritating noise and that it can be prevented. Most cities like Gainesville, we have a noise ordinance, and many other cities as well do. And we must, as citizens, put pressure on our elected officials to have them uphold their ordinances. If your community doesn't have a noise ordinance, then you must work with your elected officials in drafting one. And excuse me one second. It's a fallacy to think that you can just get used to the annoying noise and everything will be okay because your body doesn't work that way. The negative health effects still remain unless the intrusive noise is eliminated. And it's just important, very important for you. Every time you're being affected, it's important for you to let your elected officials know and citizens in your community know what you're going through, because every time you're assaulted, it must be documented, as with any other health care issue, because this is your health, and you have every right to seek protection. And what I find is most people are understanding when they become aware that a group of people in the neighborhood are being assaulted and are suffering unjustly and will rally behind you and support you. So you shouldn't be afraid to speak out about it. And it's the right thing to do, even if it means the industry that's making the noise may eventually have to shut down. And I just want to thank you for including me tonight and arranging the teleconference for everyone.
Thanks, Debbie. We really appreciate you being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Peter, would you like to go?
Yeah, my name is Peter Perkins, I have a PhD, but it's in a subject that's not related to noise. But it does give me a scientific mind to evaluate things. I am retired from the Army as a colonel, and I'm a courtesy professor here at the University of Florida. But all that aside, my wife and I are Gainesville residents since 1979, and in 2004 we decided to build our retirement home out in a very quiet part of the Alachua County in a small community. Well, considerably small. It's around 1,200 homes, but it's rural setting and it's very quiet. We're right next to a state game preserve. Hope I haven't messed up something. State game preserve called San Felasco Hammock, so it's very quiet until Greg came. And I have to, before I complain too much, I have to tell you that we met with the folks who proposed and sold this idea of building this biomass plant as a community. They came to our community, to our clubhouse, and over 200 people listened to them on the 24th of February in 2010. And noise was an issue that was brought up. I brought it up because I'd been on the internet and looked it up, and noise was a problem. And one lady asked, who had lived in a state near one, and knew about the noise, what would be the noise level. And these people that were selling this product, this is before construction or anything else happened, said that it was going to be a state-of-the-art power plant and that it would be, the noise would be less than the traffic noise on the State Road 441, which separates us from the plant. We're on the other side of it. Less than the road noise, and they were going to be good and quiet neighbors. And that lie continues just to bother my soul, because it was an outright lie, and it was made by the current owners of this biomass plant, the builders, the ones that were in charge of it all, the money guys from Boston who came here. Anyways, the incinerator started its activity on a testing level this August, and since August we've had, I don't have the exact number of complaints called in, because I just don't have that number, but it grows daily, and it's, I'm sure, over 1,000 noise complaints called in from our community and the other small communities that are adjacent to us around the plant to complain about it. But unfortunately, the city of Gainesville, which is the property across the street, is a different city. We're in the same county, but they're in a different city. And our little city of Alachua doesn't have a noise ordinance, but the city of Gainesville has one. And it's a pretty clear noise ordinance where it says if it's plainly audible and disturbing, then the police are to take action and that, you know, will be stopped. That isn't happening, and most of it is because, hey, not our problem. It's in your community. You're in a different community than we are. And so they're not enforcing. The city of Gainesville, Florida, with their green agenda of a biomass plant, is not going to listen to complaints from folks that aren't in the same city. And unfortunately, we're not. And so the noise is truly, truly unbelievable. And of late, with the leaves falling off the trees, it's getting louder by the day. We have been told, and this is, again, have been told by the owners, the Boston folks, the carpetbaggers, we call them. But anyways, the Boston folks told us that they are in the process of designing and implementing some sound suppression baffles into the stack of their smokestack or their polluting stack that will ameliorate this sound that's a problem, and that those are being fabricated now, and that they will be installed somewhere around the 15th of December, and at that time all will be well and they'll be quiet. Well, I'm sorry. Lie to me once and, you know, you'll get away with it, but do it again and it's going to be, well, as they say, hell to pay. I don't believe them. It's hard for me to believe them because of what we're up against now on the noise level. It is incredible. It goes from morning till night sometimes, and then other times it is very quiet. We've asked for and haven't received a log of their operating hours and the level of operation. So far they've kept that to themselves, but I feel that that's, since they say they're operating at 24/7 now in a testing phase, and sometimes we can't hear it, it must be the level at which it's operating. Being a 100-megawatt plant, maybe they're operating at 2 megawatts sometimes, and that's when it's quiet and we don't hear it. Anyways, it's very, very frustrating for the 2,400-plus people that live in this little community and the surrounding area to have to put up with this kind of noise, to have to move out of their bedrooms into spare rooms and living rooms to sleep at night, just to be able to sleep at night. It's just incredible. And anybody that is anywhere near where one of these plants is proposed needs to know about the noise problem. Now, we aren't going to be talking about the pollution and the other problems, but those are mighty problems also. Just the noise level and the constant noise at times that runs from dark till dawn. It's hard to walk outside without earplugs. And in your house, you can hear it coming through double pane windows and insulated walls. That's about all I have to say. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate a chance to vent. We're very frustrated down here, and we're sitting around waiting for other people to act, and it's a frustrating thing. I should say that our little city of Alachua put out a press release today for immediate release on the 14th of November in 2013, that they have established a call center for complaints regarding the Gainesville Renewable Energy Center. Now, that is a wonderful thing. Finally, we have a call center. Well, you know, it's just, that means nothing. It's just they're treading water and trying to say somebody else needs to fix this. We don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they haven't made any move to really assist us. And we have no noise ordinance in the city of Alachua that will help us in our homes. And as someone said, the shots are being fired from Gainesville, and the bullets are landing here in Alachua, but we're supposed to ignore them. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Peter. Would Ray Washington like to go?
Yes, I'm on a mobile application. Am I heard all right?
Yes.
Right. Good news.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, let me give you a little background on where my perspective on this comes from. I, like many residents of Alachua County, was vaguely aware of the biomass plant. I practiced law here and have for many years. My children went to school here. Two of them have graduated. One's still in school. And generally, this is an environmentally friendly, at least politically so, community. And there had been so little discussion of this whole issue that I certainly had no sense that there was anything bad or damaging coming down the pike. My first exposure to that, and I, if I have permission from Paula and Michael to talk about our initial encounters, I will.
Go ahead.
Are they on the call?
Yeah, they are, Michael Caney and Paula Stamer.
No problem.
Okay, great. Paula? It's up to you, but it sounds like it's okay with Michael.
Yes. All right, well,
go ahead.
I'll be very general, but I had a visit from Michael and Paula and some others regarding, it was during the need determination of the Public Service Commission. They came to my law office, and they had some great concerns over some documents that had been kept secret. And I have had a fair amount of experience in Florida Sunshine Law, and we began talking about that. And without knowing much about the plant itself, it was clear quite quickly that there had been a good deal of skirting, if not violating, our open government law, including documents and meetings themselves. By the time that I was really aware of this contract, it was more than a year in effect. It had been redacted completely with all financial issues. About half of the sentences in the contract were blacked out, about every other page. And so that's how I initially came involved in it. Then some of these folks made contact with an environmental attorney, very competent, from Indiana, and I was asked to serve in the capacity of pro hoc vice because he wasn't admitted to the state of Florida, and in that capacity was involved in three appeals that several groups were involved in. You have Karen Orr on the phone. She was one of the litigants. Michael Caney was one in the Environmental Protection Administrative Challenge Paula Stamer was one in the Public Service Commission challenge. There was also a siding board challenge, which was the plaintiff in that was a former mayor who I don't believe is on the phone tonight. And so these hearings took place in the fall of 2010 and were appealed. And by the spring of 2011, the litigants decided to settle. Now, one of the issues, as many people who fought these plants before know, is the amount of money is so great that those people who are the proponents and the investors and the speculators expect to have a lot of litigation, and they're prepared to pay for it. And at this point, in November of 13, my sort of conservative guess is they may have spent $5 or $6 million just on legal fees so far. A settlement was reached. The part that I can talk about is that it resulted in the contract being made public. Nobody knew how much this plant was going to cost. After it became public, it was easy enough to do the math, and we discovered that it would be in the neighborhood of $3.1 billion. Is that static coming from my line or someone else's? Okay, it's a little better now. The management firm, Public Finance Management, within the last month or so has released a new assessment, which puts the cost of this contract for electricity through the biomass plant at closer to $4 billion now. And so that's all playing around in the background while these latest victims of the plant, primarily residents of the Turkey Creek neighborhood, historic Hague, and some of the rural areas near the plant are getting the first direct hit. The ratepayers of GRU have already absorbed probably in the neighborhood of $30 million in early overcharges. But as far as suffering from something that directly affects their lives and every day, these folks are suffering. One of the interesting things about this plant is the jurisdictional issue, and I'll close pretty quickly, but I would like to talk about that a little bit more later on because that is the key to the avoidance of the noise issue. The plant is in one jurisdiction, one city, it's one municipality, which is Gainesville. The most of those who are affected by the sound, not all, but most, live in the city of Alachua. It's a city. And some of those in Hague are residents of Alachua County. And so you have this intersection that's going on with the city of Gainesville having a noise ordinance, but the people who are being affected are not in the city of Gainesville. The majority of people who are affected are in the city of Alachua, which does not have a noise ordinance, and some are in the city or in the county, which does have a noise ordinance. And so GREC at this point has been able to put off these folks who have been suffering, as Mr. Peterson said, for the last 2 or 3 months, by a promise that some untried baffle that is supposedly costing $500,000 will be inserted. I don't know how the people of Turkey Creek in that area feel about it, but just logically on paper, given the past promises and given the words that have been used, it seems unlikely that this will solve the problem, although it may reduce it somewhat. The key from a legal standpoint in stopping this plant, as I see it, is there have been four suits so far, all of which have been settled. There was the one before the Public Service Commission, which was a need determination. There was the one before the Department of Environmental Protection, which was settled and ended up with some greater protections than the state required. Then there was the siting board or the governor and cabinet litigation, which resulted in a settlement that made the contract unredacted. And then there was a Sunshine Law lawsuit, which forced a city commission, which after signing the contract had refused ever to hold another meeting, to actually have to hold a meeting and answer questions. And that meeting in January of this past year was sort of a floodgate of at least opinion among some members of the city commission that ultimately resulted in the resignation of the general manager of the utility effective this Friday. And all of this is sort of swirling around now as people are trying to determine what is the best way to take on and protect the community from this plant. Until this last week, there had been a former public service commissioner named Nathan Scopp, who is a resident of Gainesville, who had filed a challenge to the final air permit, which the GREC plant was seeking. The county commission also filed a challenge because of fugitive dust that is affecting a county compound there, but that's been put on hold because this last week the GREC folks withdrew their permit and I think decided that when there was less public focus that they would come back to that. Right now, the issue that I think is active and on most people's minds who are on this call today has to do with noise, and at some point I'll be happy to get more into some of the legal issues surrounding that. So that's some background.
Thank you, Ray. That was very good.
Yeah, thanks. I guess it would be great to open up the questions now. Who would like to go first?
I was wondering, Dave, if I understood what has been said, they've spent about $3 billion on this plant at this point in time. And so if it's closed down, okay, and not allowed to operate, who has to eat that loss? Just the investors, or is Gainesville on the hook for it?
Well, this is Ray Washington. The investment is estimated to be in the neighborhood of a little over $500 million for building the plant. The $3 to $4 billion is how much the contract entitles the builder to extract from GRU for electricity over 30 years. So the city recently made an offer to buy the plant for $400 million, which is less than the cost, but it would have certainly allowed the it would have allowed a substantial profit to the developers because there is a direct dollar-for-dollar non-taxable grant of about $120 million, which would have made them whole and made them a few million dollars. And also, if they were a viable company, there is a special treatment for depreciation on these plants, and a $500 million plant, for instance, could be depreciated at $100 million a year for 5 years with no recapture. That's also tax-free. So that would have been a 35% tax rate. That could have yielded them another much more, actually, than the other grants. So they could have come out. They could have accepted the developers could have accepted the offer from the city of Gainesville, and there are different views of whether among the members of the community whether that would have been a good deal. But the problem profits would have only been $100 million or $200 million, the response from the speculators that are investing in this plant was, we think it's worth hundreds and hundreds of millions more than you've offered us, and they're probably right in the sense that they have such a lopsided contract. It would be the analogy I like to use is if somebody has a $500,000 house, they can sell it on the market for $500,000. But if they've got it leased out for 30 years for $105,000 a year, they can sell it for more than that. So obviously, the people who developed this, who have this sweetheart deal of a contract, are not willing to make a small amount. They're looking to hit a home run. But to answer your question, at this point, the city of Gainesville will not be buying it. Either these folks will flip it to an investor-owned utility or to a group of private investors, and I believe their target sale price is about $1 billion.
Billion?
Yeah. $1 billion.
So this contract that we have with them for the electricity for $4 billion or so, that's an airtight contract. That's a legal contract, and there's no problems with it, or is that in court also?
It's not in court yet. One of the reasons that the general manager may have been fired, I say may because negotiated a resignation, may be because the contract was so poorly negotiated and so one-sided and with so little protection that it may not be able to be broken. There was litigation in the arbitration arena, which took place from about December of this year through August, December of last year through August of this year. The city of Gainesville paid well over $1 million in legal fees to fight that. Greg paid at least that amount or more, and also hired a couple of the highest profile white-collar crime lawyers in the country to represent them, and ended up in a very summary fashion having a arbitrator find that the contract was so tight that GRU had no claim, and Greg subsequently attempted to countersue for $50 million in damages, and there was a lot of brouhaha about that. But to answer your question, it seems like the contract was negotiated by someone who maybe, even though he was employed by the city of Gainesville, had loyalties elsewhere.
Thank you.
I'd like to go next.
Karen.
Other questions? Or comments?
Well, what would happen if nobody, it's Debbie Martinez. Did I interrupt someone?
No, I was just going to, this is Pete Perkins. I was going to say that if Ray could add to what he was going to say on the noise issue, that could be very meaningful
please.
If we could find that
sure.
out.
There are various ways, and one of the Turkey Creek residents, who's also an attorney, Jane Hendricks, I think, has been helping some of the residents there evaluate different legal approaches. There are two issues in my mind. One has to do with the damage of the noise to those people who are affected. The other has to do with a contractual provision that requires Greg to obey all ordinances of the city. And there is a noise ordinance that, in my view, has been violated. In the view of the city attorney, it has not been violated. And there are some very arcane angles that have been argued about that, and that at some point could save the city of Gainesville from having to go forward with this contract if that noise issue isn't resolved. But in terms of the individuals who could have a potential claim, there is, as I said, there's a noise ordinance in the city of Gainesville, which is where the plant sits. There's a noise ordinance in Alachua County, which is outside of where the plant sits, but of course, being a county, encompasses the plant. There are issues of preemption with regard to those two ordinances, and a question as to whether or not the county can enforce that ordinance. I believe that the city absolutely can enforce the ordinance. We, Debbie Martinez and some others and myself, had a meeting with the police chief last week and listened to all the rationales for the city of Gainesville not enforcing its noise ordinance. And these rationales seem to have been handed down to the chief through the city manager, who's his boss. I won't get into this, but the city has had for decades, an in-house legal counsel who, for personal problems, is no longer available to them. But in any event, he would report indirectly through the city attorney, and they are taking the position. It's changed, by the way. Their initial reason for not enforcing it, the city of Gainesville, was that it was not, the sound was not plainly audible. Then it was, or it didn't reach a certain decibel level. That's one way the sound ordinance is enforced. Their next approach was to say, well, it's not plainly audible to the people in Turkey Creek, because they interpreted, they being the city, interpreted plainly audible to be something that would disturb, reasonably disturb a person of ordinary sensitivities. And my statement to the city attorney, as well as to the chief of police, which neither of which were refuted, were, in my opinion, the only way that you can avoid enforcing this ordinance is if you make a finding that the 1,200 people in Turkey Creek, or however many hundreds have complained, are not reasonable people and that they have hypersensitive hearing. And the irony of this is some of the residents, and I think Mr. Perkins is one of them, who have been disturbed by this, wear hearing aids. And so, you know, they may not be people of ordinary hearing, but they are hearing that's less than ordinary, and they're disturbed. So in my opinion, that is all that was necessary to enforce the ordinance. And the police chief then shifted, as has the general manager, the city manager, who is now taking the position that it's jurisdictional, that because these folks are outside of the city limits, that they have no right to file a complaint, and the city cannot respond to it. And the illogic of this was brought home, and I like the chief of police, and I'm not blaming him for this. I think he's just repeating what his boss has told him. But his response was, well, you know, police officers are very reticent to go outside their jurisdiction because, you know, it upsets people and they could attack them. And I said, so you're telling me that the people who are complaining to you, who are asking for your help, are going to be upset because you're helping them? And, you know, there wasn't really an answer to that. And then he said, well, but the source of this is not where the people are hearing it. And my next question was, are you telling me that if a sniper climbed up on top of the smokestack at Grek and fired into Turkey Creek and killed the residents, you would have no authority to arrest him. And there was no answer for that. And so it seems that there is... Go ahead.
I wanted to let you finish, but I also just wanted to note that there is some background noise going on. There's some beeping. If someone could press *6 to mute the background noise out. Thanks. And Ray, after you want to finish, and then I think Debbie had something to say.
Okay.
Okay,
so,
no, go ahead, Ray. I can wait. Go ahead. I'm in no rush.
At least in the short term, it does not appear that there's the will on the city commission, which is really responsible for this whole fiasco to begin with. I'm not saying every member of the city commission, but the majority. There is a political machine, to be frank, that runs city and county government here. And they're sort of in deep in this and haven't been able to or are unwilling to stand up for the citizens. And so that leaves the question as to what remedies might the citizens have on their own. One remedy is common law nuisance. Now, excuse me, that's the theory of the case. The remedy that goes along with that, which I think many of the people at Turkey Creek could have initially been interested in, was to file a common law nuisance suit and have an injunction. The problem with that, of course, is you're going up against this corporation with the best lawyers in the country and millions of dollars, and they have, in their other litigation, have threatened people with being ruined financially, and so if that was the root. I'm not sure whose that is. I can tell you that's not mine that I'm hearing on there, but somebody else's. And I'll wait.
Yeah, there's definitely some background noise going on somewhere,
but I can still understand him if you all can.
Okay, I'll go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
It makes sense to me, and I've spoken with Ms. Hendricks, who's the attorney who lives in Turkey Creek, about this, and I understand that there is a risk, and if there were success in getting a temporary injunction, at least there's a possibility that a multi-million-dollar bond would have to be put up, and it would be very nerve-wracking to deal with these folks and know that they've got $4 billion of a contract at stake, and you're not going to see them go away easily. So what I had sort of encouraged is a individual suits against common law nuisance suits against Grek by individual people. And it's an interesting concept, and looking up the case law on this, I this isn't the kind of law I do, so if anybody knows better, you're welcome to correct me. But when a nuisance is not remediable, the measure of damages is the loss of your property value, but not anything else. Oddly enough, and there's a case on point down in Hillsborough County, if it's a temporary, and the courts are very willing to find almost anything temporary because something one day may be invented that can fix it. If it's a temporary matter, then you can go to a jury, and the jury can, within broad ranges, can award money damages based on your suffering and the quality of life, and you don't need experts to show that. A jury is considered able to make those determinations just as they do in pain and suffering lawsuits and so forth. And so the other beauty of that kind of litigation is that it goes on forever. You know, for instance, Mr. Perkins has suffered from August until November of 14th. If the court awarded damages, the next day he can go out again and file a lawsuit. And, you know, these are lawsuits that wouldn't be suits that people would bind together. These aren't class action lawsuits, and it can't be because everybody has suffered in a different way. But it would certainly bring some publicity and maybe some jury awards of a substantial amount. The problem is for everybody is that this is a fast-going train, and the end of the year, December 31st, is sort of a deadline. I think it's a false deadline, but it's one that the GREC speculators and owners, and by the way, there are thousands of these people who are in these four corporations. GREC is owned by a corporation in Minnesota, a corporation in Massachusetts, a corporation in New Hampshire, and a corporation in Connecticut. The New Hampshire and Connecticut corporations have global investors who, you know, each may have a little piece of this, but there are thousands of those folks. And the theory is that all of them came into this investment when it was risky, hadn't been built yet, and the managing director has indicated within the last few months that contrary to what he had told members of the community and the commission when he came, that he's not here for the long haul. He had said, we're here for the long haul. We're going to be here. They just want to go. They want to sell it to somebody else who will give them their money up front. And so although this theory of compensation that I've discussed is possible, it certainly would not yield any results before the end of the year, which is kind of a crucial time.
Thanks, Ray. Debbie, do you have something to say?
Just that one question real quick I wanted to ask Ray. Well, seeing how Mr. Gordon, the CEO of GREC, stated that he intends, his desire is to flip this plant, now that there's all this continual negative publicity since the plant has fired up with the odors and the noise, what would happen if nobody will come forward to buy this plant? What could possibly happen to the financial health of GREC?
Well, there would be an if the investors wanted to go that route, they could collect in the neighborhood of, they're claiming $120 million, but I think it's really more like, I'm not sure what that is. It feels like somebody's getting a haircut.
It sure does.
It's trying to
get away
for a few minutes.
Nope, now.
As long as it's not cordless, maybe the battery's dying or it's near a cell phone or something.
It's starting to go away a little bit now.
Hey, can I ask a question? Okay, Greg Blue here in Fort County. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Okay, okay, one of you can't hear me.
Talking, I can hear you when you speak.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to stop now. Go ahead.
Okay. So what I want to find out is the Kraft pulp mill that's already here in Port Townsend and generates about 17 megawatts of power. It's scheduled to increase to like 25 or 30 megawatts, but already it makes an ongoing low hum. And I don't think the local you know, various levels of low hums and clanks and so on. And I don't know if noise ordinances typically include that kind of background, ongoing background noise, but that can really grind on people. So I wanted to get any of your comments on that. Does that make sense?
Pete Perkins, I was interested in the quality of life destroyer, a part of this, since the sound can be very constant. And from roaring to the steady humming, about the quality of life destruction.
Yeah, and
along with that, I guess, is that now we have to, when selling a home here at Turkey Creek, the realtors are all divulging the fact that this property has got that sound problem from the Grek plant, and so residential property devaluation is just, that's happening as we speak already, and probably will continue.
Now, is that part of what Ray was talking about with individual cases that could be taken into consideration, Ray?
If it's a permanent nuisance, the measure of damages is the loss of value of the property. Of course, you have to get an expert to establish that, but that's not too hard to do.
No, it isn't, because our taxes are dropping precipitously here because the values of our houses have been dropped by the appraiser, and I don't know if that's related to the sound, but anyways, they've dropped.
Wow.
But from a standpoint of a jury that believes that people have been mistreated, I think the root of a temporary nuisance is maybe a better way to go, because a jury can still have your house, as long as
is someone on a court list?
Okay, it looks like it's cleared up now. The measure of damages is could even include punitive damage, which you couldn't in a permanent nuisance case. But I'll give you an example of how willing the courts are to find a temporary nuisance. In this Hillsborough County case that I sent to Ms. Jane Hendricks, and she may have circulated it, the very similar case, the sound levels were at a low decibel. They were disturbing people, and there were some emissions, smells, and so forth. And the plant owners introduced testimony that said that they had done all they could do. And for instance, if plant owners wanted it to be a permanent nuisance, by the way, because then their liability would be limited to a certain amount of, you know, decline in property values instead of a permanent, you know, coming back and back again for the quality of life awards, which again could include punitive damages. And the plant owner introduced testimony that they had done all that they could do, that they had hired the experts, that they'd done everything the experts said they could do. And there was one question that the judge hung on, and that says, can you say that there will never be any technology that might, you know, help? And they couldn't say that. So the judge found a temporary nuisance. Now, this case was back in the late 60s or something, and I remember the awards to each, you know, complainant back then were in the neighborhood of about $20,000. So that, present day, we're talking about maybe $150,000, and those people could keep coming back and back. It's not what people want to do. I know what the people in Turkey Creek want to do. They want the sound to be stopped, and the cleanest way to do it is to have an injunction. It's just a risky proposition.
Yes, especially against the power of the money and the lawyers that they can employ.
Right.
Whereas the individual cases, you don't have that bond you're having to put up, is what I'm hearing?
Yes, there's no bond for that because they continue to operate. The bond is to cover their losses you know, they could say that they would have made, you know, $20 million during the time the suit was going on, and if you lose the suit, they could have those profits assessed toward the people that brought the suit.
Well, that's encouraging that you have that individual option.
Well, I guess we have time for maybe one more question.
All right.
Your comment?
Okay, I was wondering if you have some studies or links that can talk about the effects of noise, especially ongoing noise, on people that we can cite.
Debbie had that. Give it to her, Debbie. It was World Health Organization.
Well,
Debbie.
Well, it's pretty devastating. It raises your blood pressure. The bottom line is it leads to heart disease, heart attacks. So it's not a good thing. Loss of sleep. It's
yeah.
really detrimental.
Debbie, I think she was looking for the reference on that.
Oh, Johns Hopkins. Oh, there's several. The American Heart and Lung Association has a lot of
Debbie,
studies.
Debbie, yeah? if you could get her email address, you could send her all those links. I know you and Karen have
right.
so
oh,
many.
Oh, I would
links.
Love to do that.
Yeah, or even send it to the biomass list. That'd be great.
I can do that.
Okay.
This is Karen.
Yes.
Great.
Thank you, Karen.
That's great.
Good idea. That'll work great. It looks like we have one more minute. Anything else?
Just want to thank everybody.
Yes.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you
all so much.
Yeah, this is really useful.
And I also want to especially thank Karen for helping us organize this call. She's really helpful. Thanks to Debbie Martinez, Peter Perkins, Ray Washington. We have these anti-biomass incineration campaign calls usually every first Thursday of the month. Our next call is in December. We don't have the date and time nailed down yet. We'll be discussing exports of wood chips and pellets overseas and the recent developments with that both on the East and the West Coast. To get future notice of calls or a link to this recording, today's call was recorded, you can email Josh Schlossberg, our co-coordinator, at josh@energyjustice.net, or you'll receive an email about that also if you're subscribed to our Biomass Opponents listserv. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much, Samantha.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night.
Yes, you speak.
Good night.
Good evening.
Sure to thank Josh.
Well, can you talk in?